FM band is from 88 megahertz up to 108.
You've got this frequency. We're going to call you CKUT. You've got this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and it looks like they pick up CKUT, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT is on the air.
Welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. We're going to start off today's show with a tribute to Raymond Lévesque, who recently died. He died on February 15th. He was a very famous Quebecois singer, and he had a great little song about Montreal called Ma Grande Ville, and here is that song now.
Quand je me balade dans les rues qui rôdent autour de mon quartier, je songe aux années révolues lorsque nos pères étaient pionniers. Que Montréal, ma grande ville, était encore un petit bout où les gens vivaient bien tranquilles entre deux rêves et deux amis. En jetant la rue Notre-Dame débordait de beaux magasins, et puis aussi de belles dames en rubané et en satin. C'était l'époque des calèches, des beaux messieurs en haut de fort, des vieux lampadaires à mèches et des rues bordées de grands arbres. Aujourd'hui dans les mêmes rues qui rôdent autour de mon quartier, autrefois belles avenues où vivaient les gens distingués, il y a des milliers de voitures et tout autant de gens pressés. De grands buildings à belle allure, des magasins illuminés. C'est aujourd'hui notre époque, mais ma grande ville n'a pas peur. Elle a su sortir de sa coque pour être aussi à la hauteur. C'est pourquoi je n'ai jamais honte de dire venez donc chez moi. C'est une des grandes villes du monde, au cœur du pays québécois. Quand je me balade dans les rues du Grand Montréal, ma cité, au fond de mon cœur j'en conclus, c'est la plus belle du monde entier.
And that was Ma Grande Ville by Raymond Lévesque, a very famous Quebecois singer who just recently died. He died February 15th. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. We have a great show for you today. Maybe you've heard about this forest out near Fairview Mall in Pointe Claire that is threatened by a development. It's actually also where there is a REM station right now being built, and the plan is to make a huge project in the area that is forested, so to basically cut down all the forest and make high-rise condominiums and other commercial space. And I believe this is a project being led by the Fairview Group, which also own Fairview Mall. So a group of citizens have gotten together in Pointe Claire to try and stop this development from happening. And I caught up with Genevieve Lussier a few days ago to talk about this project and their efforts to stop it. Here is that interview now. This is Ryan Young for CKUT 90.3 FM and Equilibrium, and I'm here with Genevieve Lussier, who is the spokesperson for Save Fairview Forest. And Fairview Forest is a large wooded area along the Trans-Canada Highway near Fairview Mall. And Genevieve Lussier is a resident of Pointe Claire, and she has been leading a group of people trying to save this forest. And we're actually sitting in our respective cars in front of it, doing a physically distanced...
We are.
...physically distanced interview. And so I thought it would be important to interview Jen about this fight for this local green space. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me why, maybe start from the beginning. How did this whole thing come about? When did you find out? And of course, the forest has been threatened more than once.
It has been threatened more than once. So if we, just to give you a little bit of context, so Fairview Forest is a forest that's about 50 acres of woods and natural spaces. It's on the corner of Brunswick Boulevard and Fairview Avenue in Pointe Claire. And like Ryan said, it runs along the Trans-Canada Highway as well. 22 acres of it is trees that are over 100 years old, so they've been surveyed. They were surveyed in 2005, and so a large portion of the forest is very mature. It's also the home of the brown snake, which is considered at risk on the and it's a snake that only exists on the island of Montreal, so that is it's extremely special. Cadillac Fairview bought this land in 2013. Before that, it belonged to Walmart, which I guess Smart Center belonged to them, and before that belonged to John Abbott. And when Smart Center owned it, they didn't do anything with the land. Cadillac Fairview bought it in 2013, and the REM station is now gone in on the south southeast corner. So there is going to be a major piece of infrastructure in that corner. But we really want to try to save the rest of the forest in its integrity.
So some trees were cut for the REM originally.
Yeah, some trees were cut for the REM. Most of the area they've taken over was shrublands, which unfortunately was a large part the home of the brown snake. So those were caught and relocated into Terracotta Park. However, there are still brown snakes in the shrublands in the southern part of the forest.
And tell me what the project is for the development of this forest.
So in October 2020, Cadillac Fairview released a preliminary plan to the public of what their vision of the asphalted area that they all already own and the forest would look like. We are still waiting to see official plans, but we want to make sure to be ahead of the ball here and get our voices heard before we see the official plans and before the city sees the official plans. So what we saw from the preliminary plan was that they were interested in clear-cutting basically everything except for a small swath of 5 to 8 acres, which they're technically legally required to keep. The forest contains wetlands, vernal ponds, a beech grove, a hemlock grove, has sugar maples. It's considered actually a very special area, so we want to make sure that it's preserved.
And beyond the environmental impacts of a project like this, would it not create immense traffic problems in the area?
So exactly, there's two main arguments here. The one main argument that we are bringing to the forefront is the environmental argument. In terms of a heat island, this is one of the worst heat islands in Montreal. Clear cutting a forest in a heat island like this would be devastating. But there's also the infrastructure argument. Cadillac Fairview's preliminary plan was to build 5,000 condos in this area, which would possibly increase the population by 10,000 people in this particular corner. I don't think that the infrastructure is ready for that. I don't think there's enough sewers for that. I don't think the roads are ready for that. So certainly there's a lot of steps to take before that would be possible.
And there's also rush hour traffic that's pretty heavy as it is.
Yeah, exactly. Even with COVID, there's often traffic. So, I mean, I can't imagine with the REM, with this influx of population, I don't know how it's feasible in this area.
And being a Pointe Claire resident, what do you like about Pointe Claire and what doesn't really work with your vision of Pointe Claire with this project?
I guess different people have different visions of Pointe Claire, but I've been a resident here for 16 years, and what really drew me to this town was the amount of green space, and I think a lot of people identify with that. People appreciate the mature trees in the area. They appreciate the green spaces, the parks. We have Terracotta, which is, you know, a it's a jewel of Point Claire, and I think Fairview Forest could be another jewel like that, but on the north side, which is so desperately needs a green space. This is the last forest in this sector, the last one. So I think that people can overlook it because it's not technically a park like Terracotta is right now, but people don't realize how much they need it and appreciate it until it's gone. And then they say, oh, we really actually loved that about our cities, that it's green. Yeah.
And so what have you been trying to do to try and raise awareness and get the word out that, that this project is threatening this forest?
So we did quite a few things. We started a Facebook page in November, Save Fairview Forest, Sauvons la Forêt Fairview. We have an Instagram page, Save Fairview Forest. We've spoken to the media a lot. We've done a lot of interviews. We started protesting every Saturday, inspired by Greta's climate strike. So this is actually a 13th protest this morning. And we continue to get honks and comments and words of support. Honestly, it's really uplifting to be here every Saturday morning because we know we're getting the word out to people and people who didn't know that this forest was possibly slated for complete deforestation. So we're going to continue to do this as long as we need to.
That's good. And what is special about the forest? What and I guess you've been exploring it more lately.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually didn't know much about this forest. I knew it was a forest. I didn't know much about the forest until last year. I discovered, yes, it's 50 acres and that's not peanuts. That's huge. Considering that Fairview itself is about 70 to 80 acres of asphalt and concrete. So Fairview Forest is 50 acres. Like I said, 22 acres of it is mature trees that are over 100 years old. We have the brown snake, we have the wetlands, we have the vernal ponds. People have seen birds of prey in there, and people use it in this area. It's being used by the community, not as an official park, but it's being used. It's been used for decades by the community. And it's a buffer from the highway. It's a sound buffer. It's a wind buffer. Like I said, it mitigates Heat Island like crazy. It's absorbing all the rainwater, all the snow melt in the spring. People use it. And especially during times of COVID, people are looking for green spaces to go to. If you've been to a local park on the weekend, then you know how much people are using those green spaces. And we need more green spaces, not less of them. And they're excellent for our mental health. So this forest is extremely special. It's needed for the community. It needs to stay.
And, you know, we often hear municipal councillors or mayors of cities claim that they need the tax revenue from these projects. But, you know, obviously there's a point at which development kind of ends, right? When you kind of develop every last little square inch of your municipality, what would you say to that argument that some politicians make that, you know, we need?
I have such a problem with that argument. Okay, first of all, Cadillac Fairview pays about $16 million in taxes a year. They're not going anywhere. Our city is not struggling financially right now.
And never has been.
And never has been struggling financially. So to me, that argument, I mean, yes, like the infinite search for money and, you know, it's never enough. I have a real problem with that, first of all. But second of all, I don't think that it's like the argument the forests don't have value until it's cut down within capitalism. I have a real issue with that. I think that if we actually quantify the value of the forest as a wind and sound mitigator, as a mental health, you know, like a in terms of helping mental health, in terms of rainwater caption, in terms of heat island mitigation, like all that, if we actually put a number on that, which we can do, but it's a complicated calculation. If we actually did that, then the evidence would be pretty clear, you know, like, and then the infrastructure, like what it's going to cost to maintain sewers and roads and what it costs to combat air pollution and all those things that to me doesn't come into the calculation as an administration that absolutely should and needs to. So that argument about, yeah, we need the tax revenue is really problematic to me because it's a multi-use project. There's like the industrial, commercial, entertainment, all that, residential. It's more complicated to calculate, like do a tax analysis on that. But purely residential projects often do not benefit the city. And that's been proven. So anyway, there's a lot of pieces in this that need to be discussed and taken care of before just saying, well, we need the tax money, because that argument to me is moot. It doesn't make sense.
Is the council, the city council of Pointe Claire, unified in their wish to develop this? How have you found interacting with your elected officials?
In 2017, the city released their urban plan for the downtown area. And in that plan, in the public consultation, we realized that they were going to allow the clear cutting. And I asked questions about that, and there was no clear answer. They just said, yep, that's our new plan, that we're going to allow clear cutting for this. And now it's zoned multi-use, which means that can be commercial, residential, industrial, basically anything. And since then, I've been asking questions at council, and I never really get a real answer. I asked them to rezone it to a park. I asked them if they understand the value of this green space, and there's never a clear answer. It's always a runaround answer. We're told about all the other wonderful things the city is doing to protect the environment and to reduce their environmental impact, which is great, but it doesn't answer my question about the forest. And I hope, since it's an election year, I hope that this comes to the forefront and people have to start taking a position on it, a clear, definite position on this. I hope the councillors do that. I hope the mayor does that. And I hope that other municipalities do as well, because this is directly affecting Kirkland and DDO as well.
You've gotten to know a lot of other environmental activists that have tried to save other green spaces like this. Are there some models in other municipalities that are obvious ones that Pointe Claire could use to protect these woods?
I think it's tricky, because there are great examples like Angel Woods that was protected. The developer brought the city to court, tried to sue them after the city changed the zoning to a green space. And the Court of Appeal agreed that the developer had no acquired right on the land until the plans were approved by the city. So I use that as an example a lot. More recently, the forest at Anselme-Levin and I think it's Saint-Jean. In Pierrefonds, the city refused a developer's project after an outpouring of support from the community. And those examples are so important and so essential to environmental movements. I think, unfortunately, this situation is a bit trickier because the REM is going in, and then we have density requirements put on us by the city. So it has to be densified to a certain degree, but at the same time, I think there's also other considerations to be taken, and we know in this day and age that green spaces need to stay. So to me, that's the main argument.
What about the example of Penkwer, which actually bought it? The city bought it.
Yes. Russo Forest. Yeah. Yes. Russo Forest, exactly. So they also had a fight ahead of them, and the council was not on their side, and the mayor was not on their side in the beginning, but they changed their mind. So that, and the city bought it. So that's another example that we love to talk about as well. It's inspiring and important. And so we definitely do bring these examples up and make sure that the council knows that, and the mayor knows that there is no, first of all, no acquired right. You know, what happened in Angel Woods is proof of that. We do have trickier situations to deal with in this situation, in this location, but those examples are definitely super important, and we do mention those a lot.
I know that in the case of Penkwer, they did take a poll, and residents were willing to spend a little bit more money on their tax bill to see the forest protected.
Well, that's really interesting, because I didn't know that part, and that's something that I think the city could do. Maybe if they did do some type of referendum or some type of poll and find out exactly what the residents wanted to do, that would be important. But again, they have to show the willingness to do that. We can certainly put pressure on our administration to do that, to take those actions. And it's hard to deny what the numbers show you at the end. You know, if everybody wants to save the forest, it's kind of hard to say, well, we're going to do it. We're going to allow deforestation anyway, you know? So that would be a great move on the part of the administration.
Yeah. So what's do you have future plans? Like, you're going to continue these protests every week. Is there anything else you're working on?
So we have a petition on change.org right now, Save Fairview Forest. And we have over 13,000 signatures now. So that is huge. And we've checked in about 3,000 to 4,000 of those are Pointe Claire residents. However, we also are going to go forward with a paper petition specifically for Pointe Claire residents, and that will be separate to make sure that the city knows exactly how many residents on paper do not support the project or would prefer the zoning to be changed and the allowances to be changed. So that's what we're going to do going forward. We have a letter writing campaign planned, more media contact, all that stuff. Yeah.
And then what is it about your life in general, like your background, maybe even your upbringing, which made you the type of person that would want to protect a forest?
My mom was quite the activist growing up, an anti-nuclear activist, environmental activist, and I grew up with that. And I don't think I appreciated that until I was older and went, oh boy, now I have kids and I'm like so worried about the planet, and like I'm not the type of person to just sit around and complain about things. I really am an action-oriented person, and it's so inspiring to be around other people like that as well. So that's when you surround yourself with people that are activists and care a lot, then you end up finding the energy to do a lot of these things. So that's what my background is. I've been involved with a lot of actions like that, but I'm a teacher by education. Just need to get involved. I can't let these things just go by. Yeah.
And what is it about, I think it's an important point to make that since COVID, since the pandemic, these green spaces are suddenly all the more coveted by communities, all the more, important, because people can only go for walks around where they live. Right, they can't go off to Florida, or it's very discouraged.
Yes.
At the moment to go to a sunnier location. So in a way, it's almost forcing people to get to know their local area and then realize, oh, there's something of value here that I need to protect.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where we're hoping a lot of people who have never been activists before, who never had time or energy to care before, are now finding the time and energy to care about these green spaces because they're using them now. And they realize, whoa, I feel a lot better after I go for a walk in the forest. You know, I feel a lot more relaxed, or I feel like I'm less stressed, I'm less anxious. And we know the scientific proof that being in forests and being in nature is calming, is helps from mental health a great deal. So we're hoping that, yeah, a lot of people that have never really wanted to get involved are now getting involved. We can see that, but all the honks we've had this morning, by all the honks we have every Saturday morning we're here, people love what we're doing. They're encouraged. And it's not necessarily people that have ever had a second thought about deforesting before. And now they're, getting active.
And have you ever had problems when you've been setting up your signs on the corner, or like complaints or?
No, we set up our signs on public land, so it's not really an issue. We are in constant communication with public security, and we want to, you know, to let them know what we're doing, and they appreciate the heads up. So no, we've never had an issue here. Only support.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And have you ever sought out the advice of groups like the Green Coalition, and have they assisted you at all?
Yeah, a huge chunk of this has been connecting with other environmental communities, and Zoom has been amazing to make that happen. Facebook has been amazing to make that happen. Any type of social media, we are connecting with other groups everywhere in ways that we never could have before. And that type of solidarity is really important, I think, with the type of actions that we're trying to take and the type of work we're trying to do. So we have communicated with the Green Coalition. We're connecting with Boisier des Chênes Blancs in Île Perrot, with people who were involved in Anselme-Levin Forest and Pierrefonds. We've connected with groups out east, connected with groups in Sainte-Marthe-sur-le-Lac. So we've made a lot of connections, and I think that's important for everybody, for all the activists, and you know, to really make those connections, to be to have that type of solidarity between us. So I just want to say thank you to all the community support we've gotten so far. It's been amazing. And we have the petition on change.org. We have a Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, and we're working on a website right now. And we can also accept e-transfers, but if you go to our Facebook page, all information is there. But every action is important. That's all I want to say. And everybody who gets involved and shares and mentions and that, all that is super valuable. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today on the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. And that was Genevieve Lussier with the group Save Fairview Forest. You can find them on Facebook by looking for Save Fairview Forest or Sauvons la Forêt Fairview. They also have a petition on change.org, and you can find it by searching for the same thing, Save Fairview Forest or Sauvons la Forêt Fairview. Their petition is there on change.org. And so I hope you enjoyed that interview. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be back with a lecture from Peter Brown. The song we're going to play now is called Ganawage Wage, which is by Teddy and Eddie. And I believe this group is based in Ganawage, in the Mohawk community on the South Shore. And this is done in the same spirit, or I guess it's the same song, but the song is translated into the Mohawk language, the Ganyegahaga language. And it's based on the song by Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash called Jackson. But instead of Jackson, it's Ganawage. So enjoy that.
Wander talk on the agony. Nene shangke ninyage. Wagirun kun no run kwa. Kana wagin kini ta la kwa. Kina he gyo shwa un.
And that was Gonna Wage Wage by Teddy and Eddie. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. Peter G. Brown is a professor in the Departments of Natural Resource Sciences and Geography and the School of Environment at McGill University. And he is a principal investigator of economics for the Anthropocene, a graduate training and research partnership supported by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada. He has a number of books, including Ecological Economics for the Anthropocene, An Emerging Paradigm, and he is a member of the Society of Friends, which you may know otherwise as the Quakers. And Peter Brown put on a talk called Why We Are Lost, and this talk was put on in 2016, on May 30th, for an event called Psychiatry for a Small Planet, Eco-Social Approaches to Global Mental Health.
Brundtland Report was in 1987, so almost 30 years ago. Almost all global indicators have declined, and we're in this new era that Lawrence described very aptly, the Anthropocene, and we're making very little progress in pulling out of a global environmental catastrophe and decline. And I want to give a certain dimension of this is, I think, has to do with what philosophers would call metaphysics or ontology, or how we view our relationship to the world in a very fundamental way. And so though that's what I want to talk about. And the it's a bit complicated, but the main point can be grasped by this metaphor from a Peter Sellers movie called The Magic Christian, where he's the richest man in the world, and he's holding a board meeting on a train that's passing through some bleak part of England. I think it's Yorkshire, but Yorkshiremen don't agree. all his businesses are failing, and so he says, gentlemen, they're all men, of course, you're all fired. And the train stops sort of nowhere. He gets off first, and then they all get off, and he hands each of them a map, but he doesn't hand them any maps of Yorkshire, right? So he hands them maps of Cincinnati, Ohio, right, or Auckland, New Zealand, or Moscow, but no maps of where they are. And I think that's, we live in a kind of world of illusion, I think, so we have mental maps that don't fit reality. And this has to do with, I think, the inability of our institutions to change and adapt, because we're basically disoriented to the way the world works. And I think higher education is pretty good at passing out maps, but not maps of where we are. So the academy bears a significant share of the responsibility for the current tragedies that we're in now. So this is a picture. So my presentation is almost all photographs of pictures. If you don't like nudity, you're not going to like this presentation, so you better leave. Right? I think this picture, a famous remark by Wittgenstein about a picture, this picture holds us captive. He wasn't talking about this particular picture. This picture frames our thinking about how we relate to reality. And it's one that has a view that humans are separate and above and different from the rest of the natural world. And this sets the stage for many centuries in the early part of, in about 1620, Francis Bacon came up with the notion that we could, because of we can retake our special place, our special privilege in nature, that has, we lost our special place in nature through the fall. We were cast out of paradise. And what Francis Bacon said was, well, we can take back our rightful place in creation through the arts and sciences, right? We can understand nature, manipulate nature, and move and get ourselves back to a place of privilege that we've lost. And as Carolyn Merchant has pointed out in a really excellent book she wrote called Reinventing Eden, this sets the sort of modern project in motion of Earth domination. The human male is the dominant species. All other species are in some way or other subservient to us. Women are not at the same ontological or metaphysical level as humans, and so forth. And what happened in the, according to Carolyn Merchant, in the 19th and 20th centuries, the rise of capitalism and the financial community made the promise of retaking our place in nature actually possible. Now, that creation story has been replaced since the Second World War, particularly since about 1980, with another story, which is that there's a process of continuous creation that began somewhere around 14 billion years ago and which continues all the time. And in this story, there's no special creation of humanity. The basic narrative here is that there is a large amount of free energy in the universe, which drives basically the rise of complexity through this 14 billion year period, including drives the rise of complexity in human beings and in human civilizations. And so on this view, this is the co-evolutionary worldview, right? That human beings are part of this long productive process, that we evolve along with other species, that the Earth evolves along with us. Right, and there's a kind of reciprocal relationship between the evolution of life and the characteristics of the planet. And this is a picture of our great-grandfather, right, or a rather unpleasant picture. It's not anything like Michelangelo, but what it's got over Michelangelo's picture is that it's true, right? So where we are now is, this is my view of parts of higher education, right? We're basically destroying the prospects for our own children and I'm not talking about all of higher education, but certain elements of higher education. So I'm not going to go over this. We're in the Anthropocene. Lawrence has done a very good job of summarizing the global situation, and this is one of great danger to ourselves and to the rest of life with which we share heritage and destiny. So parts of the problem, I want to start talking now about the problems of our institutions and how we frame our institutions and our relationship to the world. Jefferson famously wrote just quote the sentence correctly, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." But there are problems with even this simple formulation of the model nation. Jefferson was criticized for holding slaves even after he had written the Declaration of Independence. He was criticized for having one of the slaves as his mistress, Sally Heming. But nobody mentions that he should be criticized for enslaving the whole world by making it private property. So I want to argue that there are certain problems in the foundations of political and economic liberalism that are impeding our adaptation to and reaction to the Anthropocene. These are property, the sovereign person, the sovereign nation, the concept of liberty, the concept of progress, and the concept of growth. So the problem with property is that, well, there are lots of problems with it. I'll just give a couple of them. One is that it finds no footing in an evolutionary worldview, right? If you can get to private property in the way we conceive of it in the Anglo-Saxon countries or Anglo-Saxon-derived countries, because in the biblical account, God gives the earth to humans, to men and the sons of men for their use, right? But in the evolutionary framework, you don't have access to those kinds of arguments. And a lot of the traditional arguments in favor of private property fail to work. So I should also point out that what's happened de facto over the last few centuries is that rich nations have basically confiscated the use of the global commons both in filling up the atmosphere with carbon dioxide and other gases, but also we've appropriated the long carbon molecules. Wes Jackson puts it, we've confiscated the coal, the oil, the forests, the top of the best soils, and so forth. So there is another way to think about the human-Earth relationship, and proposed by Thomas Berry, that instead of owning the Earth, we should think about having a mutually enhancing relationship between humans and the Earth. Okay, the second problem is, this is sort of, I take the 66 bus a lot, and this is sort of, it seems to me, what happens a lot on the 66 bus, right? So Jefferson had in mind that there's a such a thing as a sovereign person, right? The person is in control of his or her body and his or her property. And so this becomes the notion that humans are somehow disembedded, right? That we're somehow separate from the rest of the energy and material flows of the Earth. But so after this happens on the bus, you know, later on in the day you're not feeling quite so great, and then the next day you think, well, maybe I better stay home and so forth. So what I'm just trying to illustrate here is that we're embedded in the biophysical systems that are around us, right? Where our sort of separateness is maintained by our immune systems. And in an era, particularly this era of the internet, we're embedded in social meaning systems, right? That very much influence how we think and what we do. So the notion of the sovereign person, I think, is a difficulty, but I think also the notion of the sovereign state is a very big difficulty and perhaps will bring on our ruin. So this is what the world looked like when I was in second grade. You know, I remember these kind of maps, and spin these things, or these kind of globes, just spin this, and I would look, oh, well, maybe I'll go to Mongolia someday, and that would be super interesting, and so forth. But, and of course, this idea is wrong, too. This is what the world looks like. And so we're trying to manage, this is a sort of, obviously very common image at this point, but the way we should think about this is this is a depiction of a single set of systems in which all of the nations are simply parts, and to which so we're trying to govern the world with a framework about individual nation states when the world is in fact a set of complex, well, it's not even a set of systems, it's a single system. Now, maybe the worst problem is the problem with the concept of liberty. In the formulation of concept of liberty in the 18th and 19th centuries, it was assumed that a person could be free as long as his or her actions do not affect the well-being of others. Now, whether that was true then or not, I don't know. But now it's not true, because now the carbon sinks are full. Right, so almost everything we do affects the well-being of others. Right, so everybody knows that rising temperatures are causing rising sea level, right, causing penetration of aquifers by salt water. Worldwide death rates are rising from climate change and its consequences, and so forth. So the fundamental idea that underlies political liberalism and economic liberalism isn't true. But we haven't come to terms with that. So I think there's a better way, which is to think of liberty not as the foundational principle of politics, but as an element in politics. And so I would recast this to say that in the Anthropocene, liberty lives in a modest room in the mansion of justice, right? So we have to have a concept of what's fair, and then that allows us to think about what we can do and not do once we know what our fair share is. But of course, we're not really thinking that through at all, and it's one of the other reasons we're not doing that well. So another idea that's I think kind of very, very misleading is the idea of progress. But if you go back to Carolyn Merchant's proposal, the whole thing's a success, right? So the goal is to sort of recreate paradise. Get back to our rightful place of nature, and we've in fact accomplished this, right? So this is the West Edmonton Mall, and you can get Diet Coke and potato chips here anytime you want, right? So this is basically paradise has been rediscovered and been established, right? So are the universities going to save us? Well, maybe, but there's some real problems, some of which Peter has alluded to. So macroeconomics, I won't repeat much on this, macroeconomics has basically replaced the idea of progress now. Progress is economic growth. It has all of the problems that Peter is talking about. And there's one thing that's quite remarkable. is the degree to which economists think of themselves and think of macroeconomics as detached from biophysical reality. Here's a short quote from this book. And I chose this book in part because I got it for nothing. I didn't want to buy one of these, of course. And it's Ben Bernanke is one of the authors. So he wrote, ideally, for purposes of economic and environmental planning, the use and misuse of natural resources and the environment should be appropriately measured in the national income accounts. Unfortunately, they are not. So this is the notion here is that somehow whether we can plan macroeconomics, but we don't have any systematic way of accounting for the relationship between macroeconomics and the biophysical reality on which it depends. So we're up against a serious problem. The point is that it's a perpetual motion machine. Right? There's no way in a universe governed by thermodynamics that this could even be remotely be true. So this goes back to this notion that somehow what humans do is separate from everything else, right? There's a kind of metaphysical long, a couple thousand years at least of a metaphysical mistake here that's still going on. If you recall, Narcissus, very attractive young man, and many women are attracted to him, trying to get his attention and so forth, but he is so infatuated with his own image and his own being that he doesn't pay attention to any of them. In some of the stories, he actually dies as a result of self-infatuation. So I think this is, in part, what we do in education, right? We don't study the universe, as it's the purpose of universities is to study the universe and the human place in it. We study our thoughts about the universe. So in economics and finance, I think, are the poster children of this phenomena, right? So we have these ideas about how things work. We don't connect them to how things actually work, right? So we're studying our own images, not the reality that's out there. So the problem is that huge numbers of students study topics like economics and finance. I'm not saying they're the only ones. Just come back to that in questions. And then when they leave the university, having no connection between their thought systems and the biophysical reality of the planet, they sow mayhem. So what can be done about higher education? Well, one thing I suggest is reject narcissism, connect the social sciences, or at least some of the social sciences, with the revolution in physics, chemistry, and biology in the 20th century. At least get these things informed about each other. Right? Second, recognize that embedded thought systems are like infectious diseases, right? Disembedded thought systems. That is, thought systems that have no empirical grounding in reality can colonize other thought systems. This is called by Richard Norgaard, in the case of economics, economism, right? Where everything, where the tools and thought systems of economics are used in disciplines for which they are, in my view at least, radically unsuited. Third remedy, or third thing to try to fix in higher education, is take responsibility for our role in the declining prospects of life on Earth. And fourth, make the reconciliation of science and the social sciences a condition of further support. So, in other words, we have to go back to and take seriously a co-evolutionary worldview. In a co-evolutionary worldview, there are no chosen species. There's no chosen people. There's no chosen gender. The human population growth is not an intrinsic good. There is no divine mandate that humans own the earth. There is no exogenous rescue. Nobody's going to come from somewhere else in the universe and fix this mess, right? And there's no ex cathedra moral system like the Ten Commandments, which is independent of the biophysical coevolutionary reality. Moral systems arise as part of the evolutionary process and are adapted to for a whole variety of reasons. So lastly, I just want to talk about what citizenship would look like in the framework that I'm talking about, and then I'll conclude. I'm influenced by a book, by a very short book, a very well-written book by James Karsh called Finite and Infinite Games. And he distinguishes between finite games, which are like hockey and football and things like that. The point of the game is to win. It's played in a particular place. There's a certain set of rules, number of players, it's limited, and so forth. He says, okay, that's all fine, but there are also infinite games where the purpose of the game is to keep the game going. The ultimate infinite game is evolution, right? It's a process. It unfolds unfolding continuously into novelty. And on this point of view, what we should do is we should think about being in an infinite game in which the purpose of the game is to keep it going. Property, we should think about property, shifting from property to a mutually enhancing human-Earth relationship, redefine personal and national sovereignty, subordinate liberty to justice for all of life, abandon the growth-suicide pact, begin rapid and orderly compassionate retreat, pulling back the size of the human project on the planet in a way that protects the most vulnerable persons and ecosystems. And in my mind, this would be the proper definition of progress in the Anthropocene. Thank you.
And that was Peter Brown's talk at an event called Psychiatry for a Small Planet, Eco-Social Approaches to Global Mental Health, which was done back on May 30th, 2016 in Montreal. And Peter Brown is a professor in the Departments of Natural Resource Sciences and Geography and the School of Environment at McGill University. And he is an author of books like Ecological Economics for the Anthropocene, An Emerging Paradigm. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we don't really have any time left, so we're going to end it here. And so thanks for listening. You can always email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. You can follow us on Facebook at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/EquilibriumCKUTMontreal. And you can find me on Twitter at Ryan V. Young, and I'm also on Instagram at Ryan Young Naturalist. We're going to leave you with some music from Half Moon Run, which is a local band formed here in Montreal, but I think most of the members are actually from British Columbia. But this song, which I really like, is called Favorite Boy.
Don't you know that I wanna be there? But it gave my CKUT's 2020 funding drive has been postponed indefinitely, but we are still accepting donations to help us sustain the station's operations while we remain closed due to COVID-19. Our wide network of volunteers provides an essential service to many different communities in Montreal, and the isolation of the past few months has highlighted how important independent news, arts and culture, and music programming is for Montreal's underrepresented communities. If you are in a position to give during this time, visit ckut.ca and click on the green Donate button to make a contribution, or contact funding@ckut.ca if you have any questions. Thank you for your continued support. Love, CKUT.
These folks at CKUT love their 100% certified organic and fair trade gourmet coffee from Saint-Tropez. Prepared in the heart of Montreal with beans from all over the world, you can find and get your own cup of freshly brewed Saint-Tropez coffee from AUS Snacks on McGill Campus or from Café Saint-Tropez on the corner of Saint-Urbain and Duluth.
I need a fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Fresh cappuccino with a mocha twist. Hey, miss.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT's 2020 funding drive has been postponed indefinitely, but we are still accepting donations to help us sustain the station's operations while we remain closed due to COVID-19. Our wide network of volunteers provides an essential service to many different communities in Montreal, and the isolation of the past few months has highlighted how important independent news, arts and culture, and music programming is for Montreal's underrepresented communities. If you are in a position to give during this time, visit ckut.ca and click on the green Donate button to make a contribution, or contact funding@ckut.ca if you have any questions. Thank you for your continued support. Love, CKUT.
Prevent the spread of the virus. Wear a mask in public places, such as on public transit and in grocery stores and businesses. The best way to protect your health and the health of those around you is still to follow recognized hygiene measures. For example, washing your hands regularly and keeping your distance. Let's continue to protect ourselves. Find out more at quebec.ca/mask. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
I'm Noam Chomsky, speaking from MIT. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yo, do it for the hood, y'all. Southside with an L, cause I'm fresh. Do it for the hood, real. Southside with an L, cause I'm fresh.
University, I pull it up in Mercury. Mama, how we filled up with bags of Hercules. Soon as I finish pissing, I put the seat down. Oh, my mama be done cut my damn town. Only child, no siblings, no besties. I couldn't do nothing right like a lefty. Bought my mama first house with the jewel, man. Bought my mama second house with the club, man. Me and mama used to chop out the same house. Used to eat and go to sleep on the same couch. Me and mama got busted at the same time. When the court and told you the damn same lies, I can tell mama proud of her only son. Two chains, I have always worn more than one. Yeah, I'm real, I'm ill, you know you gotta feel. You popping pill, I'm real than $2.